All the buttons?
Yeah.
You're doing it all? I pushed that.
Si alguien más necesita, levante la mano y yo paso su lugar para darle un traductor.
Okay. All right, we're starting again. So we're going to talk about Hashem's Kirov program and our role in it as women. So this is my own thought, Hashem's Kirov program, because many of us are involved in Kirov professionally or as a lay person, non-professionally. And we engage in many different Kirov programs, and obviously I work for Ner La'Elef, which is a Kirov training program and a Kirov support program. So we've come up with, as human beings, many different ways that we want to engage in Kirov. But I think it's important once in a while to look back and see what actually is Hashem's Kirov program. So let's look back really to the beginning of the world. So who was the first? We'll look back not quite to the beginning, but who was the first Mekarev? Avraham Avinu, right. Not the first monotheist. A lot of people talk about Avraham as the first monotheist, but he was not. He was the first monotheist with a mission. Right, there were monotheists before him. Noah, of course, was a monotheist. Adam was a monotheist. Let's just talk about Noah for a minute. Right, for 120 years, Noah built a boat in his front yard. There was no water anywhere. And all his neighbors were asking him, Noah, what's going on with the boat in your front yard? And how many people was he makariv to bring on that boat with him? No one. Not one. Right, so He was a different kind of monotheist. He was a monotheist for himself. He knew he wanted to be in his own relationship with Hashem, but he didn't really understand the connection of all human beings to Hashem, or that each human being has a role in helping other human beings have a relationship with Hashem. So what happened? When the world was first created, Adam and Chava were in a relationship with Hashem, and they had that powerful moment of choice when they could choose up into the times of Mashiach or choose down into they didn't know, right? So the choice that they made was a rocket-powered choice, a strong choice that would have transformed the world in either direction. So instead of choosing up into transformation of perfection, they chose down into a level of destruction that we're still living in today. When they chose down, everything was transformed. They chose into a world where we wear these heavy bodies on us now, this body of ore, when we used to have ore with an ayin, when we used to have a body of ore with an aleph. So we were still physical before that, but a very different type of physical. Everything changed. So humanity's moving along from Adam through Noah all the way until Abraham. Abraham's the first person in history. Everybody knows when he was born, right? Which year was he born in? From the year zero, creation is zero. What year was Abraham born? Excellent. 1948. Right? You can remember that because the state of Israel is 1948 in the 2014 count. Right? But in the 5774 count, 1948 is when Abraham Avinu was born. So almost 2,000 years went by from the chait of Adam and Chava until Abraham finally, at this lower level, looked up and saw the potential, who we could be as human beings. The reason that Hashem created the world was for all human beings to connect with Hashem. But they weren't, right? So he's the first human being who looks up and sees human potential and says, Hashem, amazing, I want to get there. And I want to create this relationship with you on that level, not on this level that I'm on. And Hashem said, finally, somebody gets it. And so he says, Abraham, you and me, we're going to change the world. And Abraham says to him, Bemet Ida. What kind of question is that? He says, how will I know? Right? How? He's talking to Hashem. And Hashem says, you and me will change the whole world. And Abraham says, Bemet Ida. And Hashem's answer is a very strange answer. A strange question or a strange answer. Hashem's answer is, your children will be strangers in a strange land. They'll be oppressed and tortured, and then they'll come out with a lot of stuff. What kind of question is that? And what kind of answer is that? Right? So we have to, our Chachamim translate the question and the answer for us.
which I'll translate again into today's English. So the question is, Hashem, Gameida, right? Hashem, I understand why I deserve to be in this special relationship with you. I looked up, I saw the potential, I get it. There's something that we need to do, not just to be monotheists, but to reach out to others and teach others about it, to bring other people into this relationship. I understand why I earned this special role with you. But how will my children earn it? How will it be me and you and my family? How will we merit that? And Hashem said, don't worry. I have a workshop all set up for you. It's called Mitzrayim. You're going to go into Mitzrayim, and you're going to be squeezed tight. And I'm going to squeeze the regular human being out of you. Because remember, at that time, there were no Jews yet. Abraham was not a Jew. And we know that today, we are a different spiritual species. Right? We're not regular human beings. We have the regular shape. So we look like regular human beings. It helps us, in many ways, maintain our free will. We could, chas v'shalom, assimilate, and nobody will know. We can just disappear in the crowd, right? Or when somebody from the crowd says, hey, I want to join you, and they convert according to halacha, and they go into the mikvah, they don't come out looking different, right? They look the same. There's no open miracles with it, so we need to have the same body shape. But our neshama shape is completely different. We are different species. How did that happen? This is how it happened. Excuse me, Hashem said, don't worry. I have this whole workshop set up. They're going to go into Mitzrayim. I'll squeeze them so tight. It'll be painful. But I'll squeeze your family so tight that all the regularness of human beings will be squeezed out of them. And then, just like a sponge squeezed tight, it's so absorbent, I'll take you to Sinai and open you up. And in all those empty spaces, you'll absorb the light of the Torah. And through that, you'll be totally transformed. So through a dual process of removing the dross of humanity and then absorbing the light of the Torah, you will be transformed. And with that energy, you'll be able to change the world. So here we are today, the children of this process. And every year, we still go through our process, especially during Sukkot, even though women are exempt from the mitzvah, but they can still merit the light that comes from it. When we sit in the sukkah, part of what's happening is the sukkah represents the Anenei HaKavod. And the light from the Anenei HaKavod, not just at Sinai we got the light, but 40 years in the desert we absorbed the light inside the Anenei HaKavod. So every year we have a whole week where we can sit inside those Anenei HaKavod and absorb the light. We're like glow-in-the-dark people. Think about a glow-in-the-dark toy that you have. What do you have to do? It doesn't glow the whole time. You have to hold it up to the light, let it absorb the light, and then it can glow in the dark. And that's how we are as a people. We're glow-in-the-dark people. The world is a dark place, but we're here to glow and to shine brightly. But we have to hold ourselves to the light. So we can sit in the sukkah, and we can learn Torah, and we can daven. These are all ways to connect with the light and absorb the light into us so that we can glow in the darkness of the world. So really, Hashem's Kiruv program is to start with this person, expand it into a family, and then expand it into a nation. And we, as part of the nation, have dual role. So we act as individuals, and we act as members of a nation. But really, Hashem's Kiruv program is through both of those roles that we play. So we have our role as a nation, and think about who we are as a nation. We started out, again, in Sinai, moving into Eretz Yisrael. We have to think about why do we need a nation, and why do we need a land, and why do we, for some period of time, not need a land, right? So all those different things. So let's just start by thinking about our name, or B'nai Yisrael. We're not considered B'nai Abraham, right? That's not our name. Because Abraham had two children. One chose in, one chose out. He had more children after that. But basically, one person can't change the whole world.
We're not called the B'nai Yitzhak either. Right? We're called the B'nai Yisrael because there had to be a big enough family to be the seed of a nation, even though we're a tiny nation, but we are the nation that transforms everything. Do you know how cheese is made?
Milk,
right? So let's imagine in a cheese factory, you have a vat of milk the size of this room. You have to add some rennet to the milk. Rennet is either came from the stomach of a calf, and now we make it from enzymes. How much rennet do you need to add to a room this size of milk to make it turn into cheese?
Like a kilo?
A kilo, probably not even a kilo. I don't know exactly how much, but it's very little. Maybe half a cup for all this milk. It's very, very little. It's statistically insignificant. Jews are the rent in the cheese of the world, right? We are that tiny little amount that you can't even tell it's there, except for we make all the difference. Completely transform everything. That's who we are as a nation. So as a nation, you can't even tell statistically in terms of numbers, you can't even tell we're on the planet. We don't actually matter in terms of numbers. But in terms of impact, we matter tremendously. So we start out as a nation going into the land. First, we do need a land. It is important to have a state. This is Rav Hirsch. I learned this from Rav Hirsch. I'm sure it's other places, but he gathers it up together for my understanding and for me to share. So Rav Hirsch explains that the state of Israel, the land of Israel, where it's located, and the fact that we need a state there, just think about where the land is located, right? It's at the convergence of three continents. You have Africa and Asia and Europe and Ocean, which means that everybody at that time had to pass through Israel to go anywhere. So it's the place where a tiny little place, again, you can hardly see it on the map compared to every place else, like an eyelash on the map, right? But that tiny little eyelash on the map is where all the ideas of the world come from. The ideas that we live with now, that we think of as regular ideas of Western civilization, blind justice, universal education, inherent human dignity, world peace, all of that came from the Jews, from the Torah, from Hashem, through the Jews to the world. Today, nobody has to pass through Israel except through technology, right? The Jews are the ones who figured out texting, and so much of the computer stuff, so much still passes through the mind and hands of the Jew in order to spread information to the world. We have to still figure out how to turn it all towards Torah, but we should just know that we are that tiny little piece that still is the transfer of ideas into the world. Okay, so we have this land. We haven't yet fulfilled this, but the reason why we need a land is so that we can be a nation that shines in the world. Right? We're supposed to be a nation of garbage men, violin players, lawmakers, doctors, teachers, translators, Torah teachers, whatever it is, everybody. We need a nation of everybody so that we can show the world what it's like to be connected to Hashem as everybody. So that people should look at us and say, wow, what makes you such a tiny people? What makes you shine like that? What makes your government so functional? What makes your law so fair? What makes your families so happy? What makes you have so much meaning in your life and such a shine on your face? What makes you like that? Teach me that. We're still working towards that. That's the goal. We're not there yet. But we needed to be a nation even before that happened because there's a lot of things that have to happen with us and through us. So first, we have to become a nation, which we did. And then we have to be a nation in history. So we moved into the land, but we knew very clearly we were going to be thrown out pretty much right away. We didn't have too long in the land before we were exiled. Now we're sprinkled all over the world. Why are we sprinkled all over the world? We're sprinkled for a lot of different reasons. I heard from Rav Moshe Shapiro, who we've got to hear this morning, several years ago at an HF conference in the United States.
fire we sprinkle all over the world. We're here to gather sparks. As we know, when the Torah was offered to the Jews, it was offered to many different nations. What does that mean, it was offered to many different nations and those nations rejected? Did Hashem really gather the nation like he gathered the Jews? I mean, he gathered us all together. All of us were there. And we all got to say Naaseh v'Nishma. But when he offered it to the other nations, did he gather those nations so that everybody got to answer? He didn't. He asked basically the Tsar of that nation, that angel of that nation, would you like the Torah? And since that Malach represented the whole nation, he could answer with the energy of the nation, not really that interested. Nevertheless, there were individuals in each nation who said, I'm interested, I want that, but they had the misfortune to be part of a nation that collectively said no. So part of the reason why we're sprinkled among the nations is so that we should gather in those sparks. Each one has to be gathered in. The whole world is supposed to participate in this ultimate revelation of Hashem's oneness. We, as Jews, carry Hashem's oneness as a message to the world, but it's for the whole world. When Mashiach comes, it's not going to be to one person, and it's not going to be to one community or one brand of Frumkeit, and it's not going to be just to the Jews either. It's going to be to the whole world. The whole world will be transformed when Mashiach comes. So, really, the whole world has to be part of this project. It turns out that in the end of days, which we're in, all the nations are supposed to come tachat kanfei Hashchina, underneath the wings of the Shechina. But they haven't yet. We look around and we see they're not so interested. So what do we have instead? This I learned from Rabbi Edelstein, who will be speaking later. We have converts from all the nations. A convert from Mexico is different than a convert from Alaska, is different than a convert from Australia, is different from a convert from Bosnia, is different from a convert from Persia. They're all different, and they each bring their national energy with them into the Jewish people. And there's a redemption of each nation's energy as it's brought into the Jewish people through these gerim. So we have those sparks to gather. But we also have the sparks of Baalei Tshuva to gather. Think about how many Jews there must be in this world. If it goes without, you don't have to believe anything to be Jewish, as you know. Just to be the daughter or son of a Jewish mother. Right? So there are plenty of Jews who have no clue that they're Jewish. Probably tens of millions, maybe hundreds of millions of people who have no clue at all that they're Jewish. I had a Catholic babysitter on Long Island when I was raising my little children there. She was very good with little kids. A lot of people brought their children to her. And one day she was telling me how she loves people from all backgrounds and all countries. And you know, her mother's mother was a Jew from Russia. I said, your mother's mother was a Jew from Russia? She said, yeah, she's very Long Island. She had a very Long Island accent. I said, Margaret, that means you're Jewish. She said, oh, yeah? I said, yeah, you are. You're Jewish. So, but her grandmother came as a teenager from the pogroms and married a Catholic and had a daughter who married a Catholic who had her who married a Catholic who had her daughter who has no clue that she's Jewish. None. But she is, 100%. And her children will be too. And there's a lot of those all over the world. So there are Jews who know that they're Jewish and don't care very much and are on the edge of slipping away. And there are Jews who don't know at all, and they're Jewish, and they need to be brought back in. So part of the reason that we're sprinkled among the nations is to gather up all these sparks to create a repair from that initial damage that Adam and Chava did. We're repairing that, gathering sparks, bringing people back together. When we're gathering those sparks, what are we doing? We're creating oneness. We're really emulating Hashem. Hashem Echad, and we Jews are Echad, except for right now, we Jews are sprinkled everywhere, so we're not yet Echad. So as we're Makarav people and Makarav people, we make ourselves back into Echad. We ourselves are emulating Hashem by giving and trying to create one, and we're trying to help the whole nation emulate Hashem by becoming one, so that we will be that beacon of oneness right? So that we'll send the message of oneness. What else, though? Sprinkled among the nations, it hasn't been so easy for us, obviously. It's actually been quite difficult. We've had a rough ride, to say the least, throughout all these generations. But that's also part of it. I can't really talk about all the suffering and why we needed so much, but apparently the squeezing of Mitzrayim wasn't enough. And so we continue to suffer, but we continue to suffer really in the Megillah. Perhaps you'll learn with someone, or maybe you've learned already, or perhaps you'll be teaching how somewhere in the end of the Megillah, we actually accepted it upon ourselves to bear the message of Hashem's oneness in our flesh, to walk through the world and walk through history and manage with the suffering, so that with our very bodies, not just with our mouths, not just with our ideas, not just with our spirituality, but with our goof, we should bear the message of oneness in the world. So how has that happened? We can only see it in hindsight, only when we look behind and we see every single nation and how they've treated us, can we see it's such a miracle that we exist today. A clear, open miracle. Bigger than Kriyat Yam Suf is the fact that the Jew existed. The fact that you're here today, a walking, talking miracle. If you think about it, that means that from Sinai until today, everyone in your family both chose to remain Jewish and physically survived. Both. Both unlikely in every generation. And if you are sitting here today, it's because you are the daughter of somebody who chose in and survived, all the way back to Sinai. A complete and total miracle. It doesn't make any sense that you should actually be here today, except for the fact that Hashem promised that you would. That the nation would, not that any individual would. So individually, a miracle. Collectively, Hashem promised. But we bore it, we bore the difficulty and the pain in, as a nation out of our place, sprinkled around the world, so that people in the end of days would be able to look at us and say, wow, look what happened. Even though everybody knows, it's interesting, anti-Semites will say anything about us, right? They'll say, we caused AIDS, we collectively got together and caused 9/11 to happen. We poison the wells, we kill their children, we drink blood. But you'll never hear an anti-Semite say, the Jews are stupid. It's just not believable, right? We're smart people. So you'll never hear, that's just not something they could pass as a lie about the Jews. So everybody knows that the Jews have what to share and that the Jews are worth it. But here we are in a Turkish synagogue. Why do the Turkish Jews last? Because the Sultan of Turkey understood during the Spanish expulsion, Jews are good for a country. We want them. We invite them here. And he said, Jews, come to us, please. And they did. And they lasted a very long time in a very healthy, relatively healthy way in Turkey. But very few nations invited us. Right? And even Turkey, not working out so well today. But very few nations. So if we look, if we would say, if every nation would say, wow, Jews, they're so amazing. We want them. We want them to help us with our government. We want them to help us with our education. We want them, their good ideas to share with us. And every nation welcomed us, it wouldn't be a miracle that we're still here today. Because we would have been treated appropriately throughout the generations, but we weren't. Right? We're chased and beaten and burned and harmed. And here we are today in defiance of that. And it's a clear open miracle. So that we need to be a nation, that we needed to be a nation sprinkled, and that we need to be a nation united. This is Hashem's Kiruv plan, right? It is to sprinkle us among the nations and to allow us to mix into varying degrees and to pull us out and to sprinkle us again and to pull us out and to sprinkle us again and eventually to bring us all back in the end of days so that we should be in one place and we'll be able to fulfill the mission of really transforming the world through who we are. Meanwhile, we still get to transform the world through who we are, both as a nation, because we have ideas that we're sharing, and as individuals. So here we are, Mekarvot. Mexico is different than the United States, so I just have to figure out different, you'll have to translate for yourselves the different social paradigms. But whether you're supporting your husband in his learning and his institution, or whether you yourself are there being a makarevet in your own right, or whether you're a mixture of both, still, here we are, through who we are, changing the world. So let's just start with if you're not a professional makarevet, right? If you are a person who is passionate about kiruv yourself, who understands that you want to be Hashem's servant, and you're a speech pathologist, or you run a factory, or you raise your children, or whatever you're doing, you have to understand that a woman's role in kiruv is to be a woman. To be a beautiful woman, a beautiful soul shining out. And kiruv happens with how you treat your maid, with how you treat your children, with how you treat your husband, with how you park your car, with how you say thank you in the supermarket. That's all with how you brush your teeth. Literally, when you smile and you have a clean, pretty smile, it's kiruv. It is, because it's how we shine to others. In whatever we're doing, how we do our banking, how we spend our money, how we save our money, how we dress, how we decorate our homes, all of that sends a message, a subtle message in many layers. Who is a Jew and how should we live in this world with the consciousness of Hashem? And all of that shines, no matter who we are or where we are, that is the woman's role in Kiruv, is to be a woman. And from there, to build herself. So the first one that has to be built is herself. You have to build yourself into someone who can shine. And if we think about the thought of Ishto Kebeto, his wife is like his home, before a woman could even build a home, she has to build herself, right? Because she is the home. Not all Sephardim do this, but Ashkenazim, under the Chuppah, walk around their husband 7 times, their husband-to-be, right? And while they're doing that, what are they doing? They're creating his environment. Those 7 times are connected to 7 Sefirot through which Hashem created the world. And she says, as she walks around, even if she doesn't know it, these 7 circles that I make around you are like the 7 Sefirot that Hashem created this world. I now take upon myself the role of being the creator of environment. The creator of the environment of our home and the environment that should shine from our home outwards. That is my role, is to create environment. So it's an environment created through our voice and how loud or soft it is. Is it working still? Yeah? No? Yeah, now it's working? Okay, good. It's an environment of how we decorate, how we feed, what kind of food we give to our children, and when. What kind of food we give to ourselves, and when. All of that, what kind of food, whether it's physical food or spiritual food. How we feed ourselves and others. We create an environment. So the first environment has to be ourselves, because our husbands live in us. And then our family lives in our home. So then we start going outward. So self, to marriage, to home, to community, to nation, to world. So we have to start from the inner and move to the outer, but we have many circles as women that we're developing. And we have to be conscious about the circles that we are developing and realize that every single moment of it can be Kiddush Shem Shemayim. All of it. We'll talk about that more tomorrow. Okay. Let's see, where did I want to go? Okay. In thinking about our nation, we have our nation moving through history, and then we have our nation as, like I said, the remnant, nation as agent in the world. How we sprinkle ideas throughout the world. I'm not exactly sure how it works in Mexico, but I know that certainly in the United States, there's a lot of parallels in the United States with the Jews. Because the United States was really founded by Protestants who wanted to create a Bible-based society. And it was actually even a question at the time of the foundation of the United States, would the language of the United States be Hebrew? Because they actually wanted, did you know that? Yeah. I can tell you this as a 13th generation American whose family came as Puritans in 1634 to the United States. And one of, I don't have much Jewish ethos, but I have non-Jewish ethos. So Reverend Ezra Stiles is one of my great-great-great-great-grandfathers. So in the 1700s, he was the president of Yale. At that time, Yale College, now Yale University. And he's the one who established in Yale University Urim and Tumim as the insignia, because he was, as a person who cared about the Bible and about God, he wanted Hebrew. So the educated Protestant male at that time spoke their own language and was fluent in Hebrew and Latin and Greek, because, you know, they wanted the other parts of the, what they considered the Bible too, but for sure Hebrew. So Reverend Stiles actually had a relationship with Chacham Karigal from Syria. Chacham Karigal was brought from Syria to Barbados, to be a rav there. But it was a long trip in the 1700s, so he stopped in Providence, Rhode Island, where he stayed for 6 months. And during that time, the Reverend Stiles made a friendship with him, and they corresponded in Hebrew until the Chacham passed away many years later. So, but Hebrew was very important, and the first several valedictory speeches at Yale were given in Hebrew.
Wow.
Right? Because they did want to establish a Bible-based society. So the United States, even though it has not yet achieved its goals, but its underlying goals are very much parallel to Jewish goals. That's why you see Lady Liberty in the harbor, right? She's shining her light unto the nations. Because the United States believes we're here to be a light unto the nations. Yeah. And the United States is the first country in the world that had universal, free, compulsory education, where every single member of society needs to be educated. Right? In the United States, they understand education empowers, and everybody needs to be educated, because then everybody can think, and everybody is thereby freed to create their own relationship with the divine. And blind justice, right? Again, not perfectly there, but in general, the concept of blind justice is there. So, and world peace, you know, the United States is friends with Mexico, with Canada, right? And I think that's a great look at the world and how there are nations that live together and work together respectfully and in a synergistic way, rather than waiting to pounce and grab the next one, which is how it was for many, many years. So these are values that are part of the foundation of the United States that really come from the Jews and are being spread through the United States, probably being spread through other countries that embrace some of these ideals too, but it comes from having, even if the Jews aren't the ones who were the founding fathers, it's the Jewish ideas that are. So how are those ideas spread? It's not by us lecturing to the non-Jews. Although Abraham set the example of lecturing to the non-Jews. If you look in Rav Hirsch, in his commentary, and it pays to look at this, everybody should look it up on their own. But Rav Hirsch writes with Abraham right after he had his bris. Right? So everybody knows that Hashem was talking to Abraham, checking in on him, how are you feeling after your surgery, is it going all right? And Abraham was in pain, not just because of the surgery, but because he wasn't hosting any guests. He was such a giver that Hashem made it hot so that there would be no guests on the road, so he wouldn't have to have the difficulty of hosting guests, but he was in pain from not being able to give. So when he did see some guests coming, potential guests coming down the road, he said, Hashem, I'm just going to put you on pause so that I could talk to the guests. Everybody knows that story, right? But Rav Hirsch continues and says, who did Abraham put Hashem on pause for? Not for fellow Jews, because there weren't any. It was for Arabs. They weren't Muslims yet, right? It was for Arabs, for non-Jews. The first act done by the first Nim'al, the first circumcised, not yet a Jew, but Ivri, the first one, his first act was to reach out and teach non-Jews about Hashem. That was his very first act. So, and we know that firsts are very important in the Torah. Every time you see a word the first time, or a letter the first time, you learn something important about the essence of the reality of that thing, because it's the first. So if you see the first Jews, first act,
And the first act is to reach out and teach non-Jews. That is something we can learn from. It's not our role right now. We're not supposed to be lecturing right now on the streets to non-Jews. But we are supposed to be sharing this with the whole world, not just with the Jews. How do we do that? By being a Jewish people. By carrying these ideas. By living these ideas. That's why we're not a people of faith. We are a people of action. It's only by living honest, by living connected, by living kindness, by living education, by living sharing, by living giving. When we live that way, all the ideas that Hashem gave us are held in us. Right? So we still are living with our bodies. We're still showing the oneness of Hashem, but this time not through the suffering, through the keeping it inside us and keeping those ideas alive through our families and through our communities and through our nation. And just by being alive, just by walking the planet with those ideas inside of us, that keeps those ideas and spreads them. Hitler understood this. That's why he wanted to wipe out the Jews. He wanted to take over the world, but he knew the Jews were in the way. How were we in the way? We were a weak people then. We didn't have an army at that time. Right? We didn't have enough influence to be in his way, really. But he totally understood that spiritually we were 100% in the way. And in order to take over the whole world, we would first have to wipe out what he called the conscience of the world. Right? He talked about how the Jews created two blemishes, circumcision on the body and conscience on the soul. So the conscience on the soul, that's our role in humanity. We are the voice of conscience. Not just this is good and this is bad, but we live in a way, and we need to grow into living this even more strongly. We live in a way that shines what is right in the world. We carry the word of Hashem through our families, through our bodies, through our communities in the world. So even if it wasn't Jews who sat down and wrote the Declaration of Independence, but it was the fact that Jews were alive that they were able to write, we hold these words to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. That's Jewish, right? It's Jewish that every single person is created in the image of God. And because they're created in the image of God and they have Tzelem Elohim, they have certain things they should be treated with dignity and justice and fairness and kindness, right? And we live that. That's our job. So our first job, this is Hashem's Kiruv program, not even to make seminars, but to live in such a way that people are attracted to the light of who we are. I think that as firm Jews now, we need to think about how are we living this. And I think about what's going on in Israel right now. And I think we have to wake up a little bit. We have to look at ourselves, because as we see the government cutting subsidies for Torah families, for big families, for Torah learning, we have to really look at ourselves instead of blaming the government and say, actually, we've been living for 100 years next to our brethren in Israel, not next to the Goyim, next to our brothers and sisters, secular Jews. And we haven't yet, in these 100 years, shined our light brightly enough that they come to us and say, here, I want to support you. Here's part of the money I earned so that you could sit and learn. I'm willing to go to work so that you could stay learning. I'm willing to take from what I earned so that you could feed your family, because I understand I can't have 10 children, but I want you to have 10 children. And so here's some money to feed them, because you are doing such amazing work in the world. I want to support you voluntarily with my own time and money. Right? We haven't gotten there. That's actually the way it was about 150 years ago when the Jews in Israel lived out of the Chalukah system. Right? Jews from all over the world sent their tzedakah money to Israel, to the Jews living there, because we all knew as a nation that those people living there were carrying something very special and we wanted to support. So we did. But now that we're living together, not so easy. So we do have to look at ourselves. How do we shine our light to our neighbors, our Jewish neighbors, our brothers and sisters, our secular brethren in Israel, how are we shining? We need to shine more brightly towards them. So they'll be a part of us. So they'll want to be a part of us. We have this tendency to step apart and be very separate, which is a quality of the Jew. If you think about Abraham and Sarah, their name, right? Who were they? They're not Abraham HaYehudi. It's Abraham HaIvri, right? Abraham HaIvri. What's an Ivri?
Apart.
Separate and apart. Somebody who stands apart. So the first quality of the Jew is to know who you're not and to be able to stand alone. And we have to be able to stand alone, stand apart from the whole world, and sometimes stand apart from our community, and sometimes even stand apart from our family to be able to do what's really right. So we have that strong quality of apartness, but we have to make sure that that stands in balance with B'nai Yisrael. Who do we stand with? Right? That we are a part of this nation. So Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh L'Zeh, I was just speaking to a friend. I don't know about you, I'll speak about myself, but I know that sadly, I live in Chutz La'aretz because I've chosen it. I could move to Israel now, right? Most of us could. I couldn't live the same way I do right now. I would have to live on a lower standard of living. I wouldn't have the easy, my husband's an attorney, so words are his tools. And law in America is different than law in Israel. So it would be very difficult. Nevertheless, we have chosen now to stay in Galut. We, and not everybody in this room, but this generation is one of the first generations who have had the opportunity to move to Israel and have chosen not to. So we keep Shabbat here, and we might look down on somebody on Rehov Dizengoff who's smoking a cigarette on Shabbat. And yet, they're keeping a mitzvah Yishuv Haaretz. Right? So really we contribute to each other. We're keeping Shabbat. We're Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh L'Zeh. We keep Shabbat here in Chutz La'aretz, and he is breaking Shabbat but living in Eretz Yisrael. And we all are contributing. Of course we all want to get even better than that. Right? I spoke to the wife, the mother of my rabbi in Denver. She's Belgian. And she's older. And she's an Eshet Kohen. So she chose where she wants to be buried. And she spoke to the Chevra Kedisha in Belgium, where she'd like to be buried, which is on the edges of the cemetery, so that her children could visit, right? Because she's a Kohen, Isha Kohen. And the Chevra Kedisha said, no, Madame Kahan, you cannot be buried there. That is not where the Shomrei Shabbos are. She said, I am sure not one of them is smoking a cigarette on Shabbos in that area of the cemetery. So they said, Madame Kahan, you cannot be buried there with it. You have to be with the Shomrei Shabbat. She said, perhaps I could do kiruv while I'm there. Nevertheless, we have this tendency to separate, and we have to understand that we are a group together. We're one large family. We each make our contributions, and we each have places that we need to grow in. Right? Even for Shomer Shabbat, we can still grow in Shomer Tzal Hashon or in Ahavat Yisrael. And there, I recently had an experience with a rabbi that was not comfortable at all whatsoever. And I was pretty mad at him. And I realized, great, here's my opportunity to practice Ahavat Yisrael Lishma. Because I for sure don't like him. And if I can get to love him, it's only because it's a mitzvah. Right, so it's my opportunity to practice this mitzvah of Ahavat Yisrael Lishma, right? Because there's not another reason in that particular case. But what I'm saying is we have these places that we can grow because we are one nation together. So we have to understand and respect that each one of us contributes in different ways. No one Jew can keep 613 mitzvot. It's not possible, even in the best of circumstances. Some are just for judges, some are just for kohenim. Some are just for Levi'im, some are just for women, some are just for men. So all it takes the whole nation to be able to keep them all. And we all have to work together. Kol Yisrael, Arevim, Zelazel, we're all mixed in together, which is the root of Kiruv. Right? If we didn't believe in Arevut, there'd be no point in Kiruv. Well, there's really two points to Kiruv, right? Point number one is not the Arevut point. Point number one is Torah makes your life better.
And we love other people, so why would we want them to have a better life? If we're a nice person, we want to share what makes our life rich and good and connected and meaningful. So out of kindness, we want to do Kiruv. But let's say we're not a nice person, right? Let's say we just want it for the mitzvah's sake, right? That's our Arivut. That's the second reason for Kiruv. Because if we really understand that we are one nation, absolutely connected one to another, then one person's energy leak, averot, they take energy from us as a nation, it affects us. We can't be apart, right? The classic example that's given is in a boat where everybody's rowing, right, in the same direction. It could be somebody could drop the oars and they're not pulling. All right, so we'll pull them along. But what if they drop the oars and then they start to drill a hole under their seat, right? The whole boat's going to sink. We can't just, and they'll say, it's my seat. I can do what I want. I paid for this seat. You can't tell me what to do under my seat. In fact, we can, because it actually makes a difference to all of us what happens under that person's seat. We're all connected to each other. So from that perspective, that's where Kiruv flows from, really, as a mitzvah, is because we are all connected. There is the nachat from Hashem, as we heard so nicely from the Rabbanim earlier in the videos today. There is that we see the tsar of the Shechina, that the children are so far, we want to bring them back, but we want to bring them back because it's all us. We're all one. And it's interesting to think about the energy drain that could be there. In terms of converts, I'm sure you probably heard this, something that bothered me initially. It says that kasha ger kesipacha or. A ger is as difficult as a suppurating wound, a dripping, bruchy, oozing wound on the skin.
What?
Right? What? Great question. Perfect segue. Thank you. So Rashi says, why is a ger kasha kesu pachat or? Because, now here's an interesting historical perspective. A ger is as difficult as a pachat or because they're not very educated. So they might make mistakes and they'll lead other Jews astray. That's not our problem today, because today a ger has to be very educated. They don't let a ger into the mikvah before they can list the 39 malachas and some toledot, and they're dressing like a Yaakov girl, whatever it is. Like, they have to be able to read Hebrew. And I mean, they know so much. A many ger today make some other Jews not look as good because they've learned a lot. So in that sense, they could be also difficult, right? But they make other people look bad. But Rashi says, giving us a window into history, that they maybe didn't know enough. And in fact, if you look at the halacha, for conversion, the halacha is you teach them two hard mitzvahs, two easy mitzvahs, and different. So you have to leave behind your past and accept the future, but you don't have to know all of halacha before you convert. Why today do you have to be a Beis Yaakov graduate to be able to get into the mikvah? If you think about it, today you can live with a foot in many worlds, not just a foot in two worlds. At the time the halacha was written, that shiur, too hard, too easy, dip them. Where were you going to live? Only in a shtetl. There's no other place. You couldn't live in an outside neighborhood, and nobody would accept you. So obviously you were leaving your entire family behind. You had no texting or Skyping, so you couldn't stay in touch with them. And you're moving into the middle of the shtetl where you're going to become acculturated, right? So what's kasha about that ger then? Is like a supachat, right? Or we've all had yucky wounds like that. Think about riding a bike when you were six and you fell and you scraped your knee and it was a big, ugly mess that took a few weeks to heal. Can you see the scar today? No, right? You were six. It's perfect. Your knee looks great, right? It takes time and energy for a body to heal a wound like that. There's an outlay of energy to make it become perfectly blended and seamless, where you can't see it at all. And so we want to be careful today. Who do we choose to put that energy into? Because the Agar does bring that energy, as we spoke about earlier in this session, does bring that energy that we need into Klai Yisrael. But they take energy to bring in and make seamless. Right? We don't want to bring in somebody who will take energy out. So there's a lot of different ways to understand that statement, but we certainly don't want a ger who's going to come in according to halacha and then turn their back, or a Jew who's born Jewish, who is halachically Jewish, and then turns their back. They are like a supachat or. They take energy away, right? They're an energy drain. And then think about what it's like. Even if you have a paper cut, but certainly if you have a worse cut than that, your whole body doesn't feel as good, right? It's harder to do everything because you have that wound until it's healed. So that's what it's like. We have any Jew anywhere in Klal Yisrael that is taking energy away because they're wounded in some way, emotionally or psychically or intellectually or culturally wounded so that they're not a part of us, they're hurting us. And so we want to make them happy, but we also want to make the Shechina happy by bringing them all in. We want to make ourselves happy by creating a unity out of all the Jews. So really, Hashem's Kiruv program is create a nation built of families, families built of individuals, individuals, families, and nation shining in the world, wherever we are, in the workplace, on the road, shopping, in our homes. We want to be people who are shining, who are attracting people, who are setting examples of justice, of kindness, of giving, of sharing. And that's our role as women, is to bring that to fruition, to teach it and to live it, to shine it, to be people who really bring close just by living as strong women, Jewish women. I have a lot more to say, but I think I'll stop for a minute and see if you have any questions you want to add to this conversation. Any thoughts? Any questions?
I have a question.
Yes.
Before you said that Hashem spring us between all the nations, and that all these people that we have to bring all the sparks together. And but if you pay attention, we Jews that we are all around, we have a lot of illnesses. Mm-hmm. Because of our time that we are in Galus.
Yes.
So I don't see the, I see all more the illness than the illness of Galus than these sparks.
Okay. So it seems that your question is a cost-benefit analysis.
Exactly.
Right? Is it worth it to be sprinkled among the nations because we have been harmed so much by being in those nations? It's an excellent question, and it's really lucky that Hashem runs the world because he's the one who chose this. If we would do our own cost-benefit analysis, we might say it's not worth it because we have definitely, definitely been damaged in the different countries that we've been to. Just for instance, you see that many Jews from Muslim lands have a higher tolerance or even acceptance or even expectation of wife abuse, right? It's not Jewish. It's not a Yiddish azach. I don't know how you say that in Sephardic, but it's not a Jewish idea, right? To abuse wives or children or to be physically violent. It's not. And we have definitely absorbed that from some Muslim countries that we've lived among. And the same thing with every culture that we're in, whether it's the materialism, whether it's over-education. Look in the United States. It's interesting to think about how things can go astray, right? We definitely believe education empowers. We as Jews know it's Torah education. Our education empowers. You can make that message just cut away from its root and just think education empowers, which is why every Jewish mother wants to have a doctor and a lawyer, because education empowers, right? So you can lose the message very easily. And so we have suffered injury and illness from absorbing from other nations around us, no question about it. And each one of those is our own special workshop. It's our own way to be mekadesh different aspects of the world. We've often heard the mashal, the parable of being like a symphony, right? Everybody plays their own instrument. One person plays the triangle. It's just one little thing. One person plays the violin. It's practically the whole symphony, right? So, and there's different skill levels needed, but the whole thing comes together as one beautiful sound. But only if we can play it right. That violin player did not sound like that when they were eight.
or when they were 12. They sounded pretty awful, and their mother had to listen for a long time to a lot of miserable sounds before they got to be the first Bible. Think about Yitzhak Perlman. I don't know what he was like as a child. I was just zocha to see him in Colorado. He came and played with the Colorado Symphony, and I went with my son to hear him play and got to watch all the instruments and think about this mashal more carefully. Okay, so but each person had to go through their own process of learning that instrument and how to play it. We want to play a beautiful symphony of Kiddushin Shemayim. And the way that we play it is through being Mekadesh so many things in the world. If we were in our homes, think about the difference between a Baal Tshuva and a from birth person, right? We say, Ein FFB Omeid B'mkomo Shel BT. I don't know if you use those, ain from birth person, right? But can't stand in the place of somebody who is a Baal Tshuva, right? Why? Because they had to come from a very far place and shift a lot of things, that their transformation, their process, their pathway to the same exact place of keeping Shabbos and keeping kosher and looking that way in tzniut, right, was a much longer pathway than the person who was born into that. So, not that the person who was born into that doesn't have their own process, but the process of Baal Tshuva, or somebody who's born into it and leaves it and comes back, that's a real Baal Tshuva, and that's really what they're talking about, is process. The longer the process, the more schar you get, really, the more you've transformed things. This was actually Adam's failure. Adam thought to himself, with that choice, that rocket-powered choice that he had, eat the fruit or don't eat the fruit, transform the world in one way or another. He said, you know, I'm aware of the concept that if you walk a long, difficult path, you create more Kiddush Hashem. Why should I take the short path, he thought to himself, and just transform the world into perfection? Why don't I take the longer path? I'll make it a little more difficult, and then through climbing out of that hole, I'll create more Kiddush Hashem. So that's one reason why he ate from that fruit, was to create the longer path. It was a mistake. He went against what Hashem said to do. Nevertheless, that was his thinking. But he was thinking, you always have to do what Hashem says, but his thought process was correct in that the farther you traverse, the more Kedusha you create. So Hashem gave us distance to travel. So all of these difficult things are actually workshops. They're actually, how can you engage in this and sanctify it? How can you go shopping and see all those magazines and not become distracted by them? How can you redo your kitchen because you need it, but not be totally distracted by the consumer values that are out there when they constantly are pulling at you? Right? How can you, so every generation has their own things. No generation has had to deal with what any other generation had to deal with. That's the truth. We, Baruch Hashem, don't even have to think about a pogrom. My husband's grandfather came from Russia, one of, I think, 12 children, and he told stories about what it was like. The pogroms, they weren't just one pogrom. It was pogroms. You lived with that. So every time they'd get the news a pogrom is coming, his mother would kiss each one of the children and send them to each different cousin's house. You go to Aunt Sadie's, you go to Aunt Rose, you go to Aunt Leah, you go to... So that way, if a house would be destroyed, a whole family wouldn't be destroyed. They mixed their families up, so there'd be somebody left. But this wasn't just one kiss and one time. It was part of his childhood, right? This is not part of our childhood, Baruch Hashem, or our children. But in the shtetl, they did not have to deal with texting, or WhatsApp, or TV, or YouTube, right? That was not their challenge. But it's sure our challenge. How do we live with that assault all the time? And the good that's in it, you can't just throw it away. It's like dieting. You can't just stop eating, right? You have to eat. You have to pick every single time the healthy choice if you want to get there. Same thing with texting. Same thing with YouTube. There's lots of good stuff on it. You can hear Cantor Nessel of Rosenblatt on YouTube, right? He's been dead for I don't know how long, 60, 70 years. They have videos of him and his voice. It's amazing, right? You can hear Arya Kaplan teaching meditation on YouTube. You can, I mean, there's so much great stuff. You just have to be careful of all the stuff on the side, not to click on stuff. It's so hard. They didn't have to deal with that. So all of that is our opportunity to sanctify what we can in a way that no other generation did. We create our own unique pathway, which creates our own unique note in the symphony throughout the ages of all the Jews in history and today. So it's Hashem decided we should be there, we should get injured, and we need to take proactive steps to heal. It's part of our own work and part of our national work is dealing with that stuff. But that was a great question. Yeah.
Sometimes I get the people around us, like they're expecting like we are so holy, right? Because we're free. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you have to fight for your rights. How do you fight without making a huge Hashem?
It's a great question. How do you fight for the rights of firm Jews without making a Chilul Hashem? I'm not positive, but I'm guessing that the Chilul Hashem is not made in the fighting. The Chilul Hashem is made in the parts of our lives where we're not fighting. So if we would be living in a way that was congruent with Torah all the time, when we would fight for our rights, people would see it as our rights and fair and just. But since we often don't live in congruence with Torah, or since we often create Chilul Hashems in other areas, even if we've been blessed with money, but we live with it in a way that other people are jealous of us, or and then they hear us, we want more, we want rights too, that's what creates the Chilul Hashem, I think. It's something to think about. How do we manage that? Because we do have a bracha in different areas of our life that we are supposed to live in. Different people live with different things and without different things. But we need to think about the whole life so that when we have to demand rights or push for rights or work through kosher channels of government, that it's not a Chilul Hashem. That it is because we don't just look out for ourselves. We look out for the rights of all. So there's that too. You know, on the background of all, if we make sure that everybody has good schools, we don't just worry about Jewish schools. So then if we have to worry about a Jewish school getting a certain tax benefit, then it's not just us grabbing for ourselves. It's because we care about education for all human beings, including our own children. So I think that there's the rest of our lives that we have to worry about in order to make the fighting for our rights not be a Chilul Hashem. But we do have to think about that whole, the broader.
It's just like people always think that the person who is frum has to be a mevater always. And it's not right.
No, right. The person who is frum does not have to be a mevater always because we're not Christians. Right? That's a Christian idea. That's not a Jewish idea. Right, so we do have to stand for what's correct.
I have a question.
Okay, let me go here first.
My question is, you said that we're sprinkled all over and there's a reason for it, but we are in between non-Jews, and where is the line? I mean, we are supposed to approach them, also our fellow Jews that don't know, but we are in between them, and how do we balance, I mean, I'm a mother of little children, so how do we balance the stability and the Judaism in our homes, living in between people that are not Jews? If we are supposed to impact on them and shine upon them, but where's the line? Where's the balance?
I'm not getting the influence.
Great. So it's an excellent question. Where is that balance? So as I said, we don't have to go out and teach our non-Jewish neighbors. And we don't even have to go out and teach our Jewish neighbors. We don't have to, although as McCarvin, we do invite them into our homes. That's a different question. But we do impact by being who we are, by pushing our carriage down the street with a beautiful head covering and not a shmata, by having our clothes clean and our children's faces clean, by speaking politely to them and teaching them to speak politely to each other and to us and to others, so that if they're on the playground with a non-Jewish child and they're polite to them, that's a Kiddush Hashem, and it's huge. It's huge. And so we definitely need to do that. And then we also have to constantly weigh and measure our own homes and the impact on our own home. There's time, it turns out, I could tell you now, I just turned 50, I could tell you that little children don't last forever. So it seems like they will, but they don't. There is a life and a lot of life after little children. So there's a lot to do with little children, and you can do a lot of kiruv during that time, and you have a lot of time after little children to impact the world. So there may be times in your life when you want to create a more secure greenhouse around your children with a more stable environment while you're growing those little saplings to make sure they take firm root and become healthy before you open the door to the elements. So you definitely want to be careful with little children, how much you let in and how much you keep out. That's one of a nice vort that my Rabbi Avitan in Alam Shalom in Denver, but when we lived in Long Beach, he taught about how do you create Shalom Bayit. You learn from each letter, but the mem, you learn from the mem in creating Shalom Bayit. The mem comes in two shapes, closed and open. You have to know when to keep your house closed and when to open the door. Well, that's part of creating the Shalom, the Shlemut of your home, is knowing when to open and when to close the door. So definitely with little children. Close the door sometimes, it's important. But you have to protect your children. And you have to shine even from inside, and you can, strongly. Let me just, I know there's so many questions.
So isn't it a fact that when you reach out to make a rev others, don't you like get some influence from them? Just like they get influence from you, don't you get influence from them?
Yeah. Okay, so the question is, what about the negative influence that you get from them, or just even sometimes the influence, even if it's not negative? So when you're doing kiruv, it's called misirat nefesh. Because you're giving over part of your nefesh. You don't get the whole thing. You have to understand that. Yes, you are giving up on your level of kedusha as a cost-benefit analysis for the entire nation of Israel's kedusha. Overall, you hope that you're bringing in more than you're losing. But yes, you will lose some. That is the reality. The conversation at your Shabbat table will not be the same. The Divrei Torah will not be as deep. The singing will not be as robust. The conversation might turn to sports or politics. You might have to bring it back, but you are definitely giving something up. That's limsor nefesh. That's your very nefesh that you're giving as a present to Hashem and to the Jewish people. So yes, it costs. It definitely costs. There's no question about it. Hopefully you gain enough.
Sometimes when you try to shine to the others, the others don't get the shining. my family don't get the room. I don't like the room. Or in Israel, I don't like the room. Sometimes it's hard for them to get the shine.
Absorbing the shine is a multi-generational process. Learning how to shine is important, and we haven't not yet perfected that as from Jews. We are not perfect shiners. We're not. So we have to work on that. But being
How do you work on that?
We don't have so much time. We'll talk about that maybe in some other sessions. But also absorbing. But we do, as we work on it more, people will, it has to be pleasant. Drachea darchei noam, v'chol netivotei ha-shalom. If the way that we're behaving is not na'im, it's not Torah. It's just not. So we have to know, and that's the problem, is that for many, many people have interacted with Jews who keep Shabbat but aren't na'im. And so they've cut themselves off from that. So it will take a long time to rebuild trust among other Jews and among non-Jews too, so that they understand that keeping mitzvot is na'im, and that people who keep mitzvot are na'im and shalom. So we have to repair damage that we collectively, not we individually necessarily, but Kol Yisrael Arayim Zelazeh, we collectively over generations have done some damage, and we all can work on fixing that.
No, I don't
know. Okay. Anybody else?
Yes, this was exactly part of my question. Exactly, what are we doing wrong that they, for example, as you said, the Hiloinim in Israel, they should go and say, "Give, take my money, and I'm going to feed you, and I'm going to do, because I cannot feed 10 children, and I cannot have 10 children. Oh, I'm so glad that you are studying Torah." All the opposite. They hate people that study Torah. What are we doing wrong?
Okay. I'm going to have to answer that question next time, because it is 12:35. I want to answer that question. It's a great question. And Be'ezrat Hashem, I'll build it into making each day meaningful class, because that it's a vital question so that we know practically how we can change. So with that, thank you very much. And let's talk about the next question. Thank you very much. Muchas gracias a todas. Bienvenidas.